I make my bed on the clover, and I cover myself with stars.
A way of life, the gaucho, in grassy, gentle Uruguay.
We are now in the production of air conditioners, vacuum cleaners, television sets, motorcycles, and heavy tractors. Before long, we'll be exporting jeeps.
A way of life for the businessman. The mold is stamped, made in Argentina.
Ours is the land of eternal spring, because summer never comes.
Along the spine of the Andes in Colombia, that's where the fine coffee grows.
No caparino nata callarito, su canco ne amanta tu cui punja cunapi chakra per le cuscafavati.
A way of life for the Quechua Indians in the snow-covered altiplano of Ecuador, unchanged since 1492.
For years, they have been saying, Brazil is the country of the future. Well, meus amigos, the future is now the present.
Way of life in Brasilia, newest and most modern capital city in the world. No two countries alike, separate patterns of life, distinct and varied, yet part of the rambling, turbulent, life-size tapestry that is Latin America.
Continents in motion, people in transition. Today, Southern Exposure, the second of a two-part series on Latin America, presented by United Nations Radio, is narrated by Zachary Scott. Today we concentrate on those 10 countries which are known collectively as South America and the role of the United Nations in continents in motion.
This is Zachary Scott. There is a saying in the villages of South America, what is bred in the bone comes out in the flesh. In the brief minutes ahead, we cannot hope to check bone and flesh, nor the heart and mind and spirit of South America. Our aim and purpose is to lay before you a few random samples of United Nations help to the continent of South America in speeding their economic and social advance.
There are nuclear research scientists and there are headhunters. There are over 191 million people, or 7% of the total world population. The population growth of Latin America as a whole is the most explosive in the world today. By the end of the century, if the current trend continues, Latin America will have twice as many people as the United States and Canada combined. It would far outstrip the USSR, Europe, and Africa would be second only to Asia.
Yes, plenty of people. In their veins, a mixture of Spanish, Indian, Portuguese, and Negro blood. There are smaller groups of Japanese and East Indians, of Chinese, Dutch, and Syrian. They live in a continent shaped like a gigantic ice cream cone, which stretches from the Antarctic to the equator. Yes, Latin America has plenty of land.
The land area covers some 7.5 million square miles. There are 10 sovereign countries, some with possessions. The magnificent, awesome Andes Mountains separate the continent for 4,000 miles from the Caribbean Sea to its southern tip. The largest river in the world, the Amazon, with its tributaries, churns some 19,000 miles through steaming jungles, volcanoes, pampas, and rainforest. Land is plentiful in South America.
And plenty of coffee, bananas, oil, cattle.
Santos, Brazil, is the leading coffee port in the world. Ecuador, the largest exporter of bananas. Natural resources, timber, and precious metals are incalculable. Bolivia's tin, Argentina's beef are world famous. Not to mention wahoo bark, cuttle bone, scurvy grass, and motherwort used by your neighborhood drugstore or chemist to make medicines.
And plenty, mucha abundancia, of problems.
Great numbers of people, 50% or more, live in desperate poverty. Good production and housing are not keeping pace with the population growth. In many areas, one child in two has no school to go to.
And these problems are interrelated with the continent's economic problems. The Latin American economy is still largely underdeveloped and is based primarily on agriculture. There are the problems of capital and also of distribution. Now, the United Nations has four main economic commissions. There's one for Europe, one for Africa, one for Asia and the Far East, and there is ECLA, ECLA, the Economic Commission for Latin America. They meet biannually. There are representatives from 20 Latin American countries, observers from still other UN member countries, and representatives from the United Nations specialized agencies. It is here in these regional meetings that top government officials can get down to grassroots problems. Economics is a human science. It is about men working together to fulfill their own needs. It's about men working together with other peoples to satisfy their needs. To this end, economists have long discussed the idea of a common market for Latin America, an idea that the 20 countries should coordinate and integrate their industrial development. And recently, ECLA's executive secretary, Raul Prebisch, said that while international financial credit for the region was increasing, outside help would be insufficient without efforts of all countries to create their own capital goods under a common market framework. Touching on the keystone theme, he said,
"If a dynamic approach is adopted to the common market problem, it seems patent that, given the need to accelerate Latin America's industrialization process, all the countries, large, medium-sized, and small, ought to join the market in order to endow it with a breadth, depth, and efficacy which it would otherwise lack."
In South America, a breakthrough came in February 1960, when seven countries comprising 140 million people signed the Montevideo Treaty. In so doing, Argentina, Brazil, Chile, Mexico, Paraguay, Peru, and Uruguay took a major step forward toward the creation of the common market. Since this idea of economic integration received its first concrete formulation in the United Nations, Secretary General Dag Hammarskjöld hoped that it would continue to be closely associated with this new phase of economic development. The Secretary General spoke also of the contribution of the United Nations Technical Assistance Program to the interrelated aspects of economic development in Latin America. Technical assistance in Latin America.
Land and water development in the Amazon Valley.
Development of the textile industry in Ecuador.
Thousands of illiterates taught to read and write by radio in Colombia.
Help to farmers in Bolivia.
Steel mills in Brazil.
Fisheries in Argentina.
Postal service in Paraguay reorganized.
Reconstruction in Chile.
Malaria eradication in Uruguay.
Weather and meteorological services in Venezuela.
Peaceful uses of atomic energy in Peru.
And hundreds more.
The international technical aid programs of the United Nations are mutual aid operations. They involve a cross-fertilization of talent to raise the standard of living. In Latin America, there are more than 1,100 technical assistance experts. Frequently, one or more of the specialized agencies of the United Nations work together. One of the most interesting is the Andean Indian Project.
Imagine a long, long stretch of nearly barren land with hardly any vegetation, a few scattered head of cattle, and far away on the horizon, the beautiful, the majestic mountains of the Andes. That's what the Altiplano looks like.
The soft-voiced woman is speaking an ancient and honorable language, Quechua. The 10 million Indians who speak this tongue are the forgotten people of the Andes. They are the lost descendants of a once fabled Inca civilization, which at the time Columbus sailed from Spain was one of the highest civilizations on the American continents. Today, they scratch out a miserable existence on the high, bleak plateaus of the Andes in Bolivia, Ecuador, and Peru. They are among the poorest people on Earth. In most lands, nothing grows except a yellow grass. They chew the cocoa leaf to relieve their hunger and to forget the wind, which never stops howling. A group of United Nations agencies are now at work to help improve conditions for the Andean Indians. They are under the coordinating leadership of the International Labor Organization. There are World Health Organization doctors and nurses. The Food and Agriculture Organization has sent agronomists to experiment with crops and plant trees to break the wind. There are educators from the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, and schools have been built for both children and adults. The International Labor Organization has set up vocational and training schools. Trade unions from America, Belgium, Germany, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, and Switzerland have sent equipment. Indian voluntary labor built the center with adobe bricks which they made in their homes. The Belgian government sent medicines. And one of the most interesting self-help programs was that provided by ILO expert Jan Schroeder of Holland. A painter and archaeologist, Mr. Schroeder found remarkable patterns in the old Inca pottery and textiles. At the Handicraft Center in Quito, he taught the Indians the lost art of their Inca forebears and how to adopt the ancient motif to the modern market.
When I found out that they were creative, especially on the embroideries they make on their pants, you know, they use for the fiestas, I gave them the opportunity to express themselves in my studio. And those same motifs now we use in the weavings. It's a very interesting thing that a completely forgotten Indian, an Indian that lives in misery, if you get out of his own sincere expression, and if he sees that himself in his weavings, the man gets confidence in himself. And that's also part of the program. It's not only teaching him weaving, but giving those Indians a complete kind of an education, not forced and not according to our idea, but according to their own mentality.
Color and meaning introduced into the life of the Andean Indians. A lost people enroll in the 20th century. Several thousand now share in the earnings of the Quito Center. Their standard of living has been raised. They're becoming integrated into the life of their nations. They contribute to, rather than being a drag on, the economy of their country. That's what the Technical Assistance Program for the Indians of the Andes is all about. The economic development of a country is intimately related to the problem of primary education. It's the foundation for economic as well as social progress. Progress is necessarily slow where you find large numbers of South Americans who can neither read nor write.
The most basic cause of illiteracy is poverty. But I realize at the same time that the most basic cause of poverty is illiteracy. This puts us in a circular situation that is very, very difficult to break.
The speaker is William Spencer. He lived in South America, one of the many UNESCO advisors whose services have been requested by the governments of South America. If you are going to be of service to a people, you have to know the people, and you have to probe for truths, as Bill Spencer did, regardless of how distressing your findings may prove.
Illiteracy comes, very simply, of course, from lack of opportunity. Let us think, for example, of a family living in the mountain areas of Peru. This family, and there are thousands and hundreds of thousands like them, this family depends for survival on the little bit of money, food, or other saleable items that each child in that family can collect or can bring into the family during the course of a day. The mother and father work from dawn to dusk, but they cannot provide sufficiently for subsistence maintenance of their family. Therefore, each child who is able to walk, I should say, because this is about accurate, any child above the age of 2 years becomes an economic asset within the family. And therefore, when this child gets to be of school age, to send him to school is to deprive the family of a means of economic subsistence, a means of having food for that day. And consequently, since they cannot afford to let him go to school, he would thus become an economic liability in the family. He doesn't go to school. And of course, as he grows up and as he becomes a parent, and as he has his children, he tends to repeat the same cycle, so that illiteracy creates poverty, poverty creates illiteracy. There are thousands and thousands of these kinds of illustrations that you could draw from almost every area of Latin America.
How to break the cycle? Modern industrial methods demand workers who can read and write, who can read maps and charts and be precise in their work. The same thing for farmers. Agricultural developments require an educated man who can read a simple text about new scientific breeding of cattle or chickens, about tractors and other mechanized farm machinery, who can learn about plant pests and insecticides, and who can keep track of his own budget and not run into debt. Where will the South American countries find these literate people to work in their factories and on their farms, to be managers and shopkeepers, nurses and mechanics?
In November 1956, the member states of UNESCO meeting in General Conference decided to initiate a program for universal free and compulsory primary education in Latin America to be attained within a period of 10 years, that is to say, between 1957 and 1967.
Speaking is Mr. Malcolm Adesacia. He is the Assistant Director General of UNESCO.
The program faces an enormous task. It has to find schooling for about 20 million children in the next 7 years.
To complete the job, nearly 500,000 more teachers will have to be found and trained. Hundreds of thousands of schoolrooms built. Resources will have to be found. But already 4 million more children are in school today than in 1956. And 50,000 primary school teachers have been trained.
It has meant for some countries doubling the budget every year. Some countries like Venezuela, Colombia, Ecuador, and now Mexico have been steadily doubling their educational budget.
And the results at this early date?
There have been results in the sense that the number of children who are enrolled in schools have, as a result of measures taken in certain other countries that I mentioned, like Colombia, like Mexico, have increased 50% or 60%, in some cases 100%.
Education is closely connected with the national aims and ideas and the national culture of various peoples. And just as the various nations and regions are different, educational programs are also different. What then is the United Nations role? Before telling us what it is, Dr. Mata Akrawi of UNESCO tells us what it is not.
It is not in our mandate at the United Nations and at UNESCO to try and impose anything on a member state. We only act according to their desires and at their request. Of course, we try to disseminate modern ideas about methods of teaching, about the curriculum, about what kind of new textbooks one might make, about the training of teachers, and various standards that it is desirable to have, and various scientific approaches to the problem of education. But all of those are susceptible to adaptation to local needs and must be adapted to local needs. and there's no question of UNESCO or any international organization imposing anything on a member state.
That is an important thing to remember. There are several hundred United Nations assisted projects in Latin America. The UN role in each is that of servant to those governments and their people, and this is as it should be. And the role of the United Nations expert, who is the backbone of the projects, must be that of a technically skilled person with a sympathetic consideration for the work he is doing and for the people of the country with whom he is working. His goal is that of the United Nations itself, to bring about closer international collaboration by trying to improve the standard of living in his area. Training programs is one way, putting more food on the table is another. That's the mighty Amazon River. Her pale yellow-green waters abound with fish. But the people of the Amazon have never fished commercially. As there is no refrigeration in the steaming jungle, their catch, they thought, would spoil before reaching the market. D.W. Meshkat, Food and Agriculture Organization fishing expert, got hammer and nails and came up with this idea.
Distances between towns and villages and settlements are so great that it may take anything from 12 hours to several days to make the journey. The fish would be rotten before they reached the market. I've introduced a system of transporting the fish alive in wooden containers, floating them down the river to market,
resulting in more badly needed protein in the diets, much more money in the fishermen's pockets. In Recife in Brazil, in Pisco and Carcaya in Peru, Iquique and Quintay in Chile, Paita in Colombia, and Grytviken in Argentina, they go for the bigger game, whales. The whale is used for food and for many industrial purposes. Interest in whaling is on the increase due largely to the efforts of Dr. Robert Clark.
Chile and Peru take between them some 5,000 great whales annually. Most of the whaling conducted in the world is done in the Antarctic. And indeed, of the 50,000 whales which are annually caught, some 80% of them are taken around the Antarctic Ocean in summer. I think it may be said that the seas off the west coast of South America constitute the most important field. And we hope to find out more about the stocks of whales, whether there are quantities sufficient off the coast of Ecuador to support a whaling industry.
The coffee pots of the world are kept bubbling merrily, chiefly with Latin American coffee. But now, in search of a new export, they sent for Mr. Johann Kauenberg. He is a tea expert, and he is now in Argentina.
I've traveled extensively in Misiones from the banks of Rio Paraná to the coast of Uruguay and found that there may be approximately 10,000 tea planters in Misiones, and production is rapidly expanding.
Mr. Kauenberg has been brewing quite a pleasant kettle of optimism among tea planters as he assists them in growing and processing techniques.
At present, 10 million pounds of tea are being produced, of which 4.5 million will be exported this year, principally to my own country, Holland.
One man studies a tea plant, another devotes his life to whales, yet another ingeniously devises a water sled for fresh fish. None of these is a particularly earth-shattering event, yet each contributes in a small way to the overall improvement of a continent's economy, and eventually to the improvement of the standard of living of its people. At the beginning of the program, we talked about economics being a human science directed at humanity. Now, let's see how the giant international community works together for one tiny mite of humanity.
We're in a hospital that is unique for this part of the world. It is the Center for the Care of Premature Babies and is a part of the Luis Calvo McKenna Hospital in Santiago, Chile. At the moment, I'm in the office of Nurse Grace Thompson. She is an Anglo-Chilean who is in charge of the hospital.
Sí? ¿A qué hora nació?
That was Nurse Thompson receiving word that on the street of El Salvador, a 7-month baby has just been born. We are to go and fetch him and bring him back to the center. We take with us a carrying case, an oxygen bag, and various other instruments. The carrying case has a plastic window through which the child can be watched. I had noticed that some of the premature babies were so tiny they hardly seemed real. When I asked about it, I was told that the average weight was about 3 pounds, but that the center had received babies of about 1.5 pounds. However, after a stay of about 30 to 35 days, they left the center weighing approximately 5 pounds. Don Carlos, the baby we fetched, is 24 hours old and has taken his first feeding. That is, a partially filled teaspoon of formula. He weighs 2.5 pounds and is naked, for clothing adds to discomfort in breathing. But at present he has a toehold on life. I might add that throughout the many United Nations projects in South America, seldom was I made more conscious of this concern than in that shown by the United Nations in the life of a tiny 2.5-pound baby at the premature baby center in Santiago, Chile.
¿Sí? ¿A qué hora nació? ¿Cuánto pesa?
The world that Don Carlos will grow up in is a world of change, of social revolution. In his town, in other villages, where the campesino of Colombia and the garimpeiro of Brazil work the backlands, there is a yearning for a better life, the same yearning which is spreading today in the so-called underdeveloped areas of Asia and Africa. To give reality to these wants is the major responsibility, indeed the preoccupation, of the national governments. However, outside help is essential, and it's being given in many ways, directly from governments to governments, from people to people, and today through international organizations. Our purpose today has been to present a brief outline of some forms that international help takes today in South America, this continent in motion.
Continents in Motion today dealt with the economic and social developments in South America. Titled Southern Exposure, this program was narrated by Zachary Scott and written by David Surek. It was directed by Warren Somerville and Trudy Glass. The original guitar music was by Gonzalo Hernandez. The program was produced by the international staff of United Nations Radio.